The chapel stall of carved oak on which Sir Horatio Hornblower was sitting was most uncomfortable, and the sermon which the Dean of Westminster was preaching was deadly dull. Hornblower fidgeted like a child, and like a child he peered round the chapel and at the congregation to distract his mind from his physical troubles. Over his head soared the exquisite fan tracery of what Hornblower soberly decided was the most beautiful building in the world. There was something mathematically satisfactory in the way the spreading patterns met and remet, a sort of inspired logic. The nameless workmen who'd done that carving must have been far-sighted creative men. The sermon was still going on, and Hornblower feared that when it was finished there would be some more singing, more of those high-pitched noises from the surpliced choir boys which would distress him painfully again, more painfully than the sermon or the oaken stall. This was the price he had to pay for having a ribbon and star to wear, for being a knight of the most honourable order of the Bath. As he was known to be on sick leave in England, and fully convalescent, he could not possibly evade attendance at this, the most important ceremonial of the order. Certainly the chapel looked effective enough, the dull sunshine which made its way through the windows being reflected and multiplied into a soul-stirring glow by the knight's crimson mantles and flashing orders. There was at least this to be said for this pomp and vanity. It was certainly beautiful in a strange, effective way, even without regard to historical associations. Maybe the stall on which he sat had in earlier years caused the same discomfort to Hawke or Anson. Maybe Marlborough, in crimson and white similar to his own, had fidgeted and fretted through a similar sermon. The important-looking person over there, with a silver-gilt crown on his head and velvet tabard embroidered with royal arms, was merely Bath King-at-Arms, some well-connected fellow who had this well-paid sinecure and could doubtless comfort himself, while sitting through the sermon, with a thought that he was earning his living by doing so once a year. Beside him was the Prince Regent, the sovereign of the order, his scarlet face at odds with the crimson of his mantle. And there were soldiers, generals, and colonels, with whose faces he was unfamiliar. But elsewhere in the chapel there were men with whom he was proud to share the brotherhood of the order. Lord St. Vincent, huge and grim, the man who took his fleet down into the heart of a Spanish squadron twice its strength. Duncan, who destroyed the Dutch navy at Camperdown, and a dozen more of admirals and captains, some of them even junior to him in the navy list. Lydiard, who captured the Pomona off Havana, Samuel Hood, who commanded the Zealous at the Nile, and Yeo, who stormed the fort at El Muro. There was something pleasant and heartwarming at being a member of the same chivalrous order as men like these. Ridiculous, but true.